This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Coming up, Subversity with Dan Zhang. Today we're going to be talking about a new film that's coming out, Better Luck Tomorrow. And it's a film that looks at youth culture and what's beneath the surface. We have with us an interview with the director of Better Luck Tomorrow, who is from Orange County and grew up here. And his other film was called Shopping for Fangs, which he co-directed with Quentin Lee. And this is this film is coming out this Friday, this new film called Better Luck Tomorrow. And we asked him why he did this film. Welcome to the show, Justin Lin.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, the film you made, is it? Do you think of it as a crossover film?
When I was making it, I didn't really have that in mind. You know, I guess, you know, at the purest level, it was just a film that I felt compelled to make. I think personally at that time in my life, I was struggling so much. I just got out of film school. I was in debt. And I thought, you know, I'm going to take 10 credit cards and make this movie. And if I was going to do that, what subjects would I tackle? What issues are important to me? So when I was making the film, I realized, you know, I've been working with youth, a lot of the youth today. And, you know, the whole issue, teen violence, is something that it affects all of us and it disturbs us. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of people deal with it kind of on a surface level, on face value, and then they throw away the newspaper and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so I really felt compelled to try to explore that, bring up the issues, bring up the questions. So, you know, I have to say that I really didn't think about that when I did make the film. But now that I've made the film and actually I've gone through this whole journey, I mean, in a way, you know, a year ago, you asked what the dream was. We'd be like, oh, we get picked up for distribution, you know, by a studio. But honestly, going through it now, I would not have known what that meant a year ago, you know. And I do think that this is a film that has a very specific perspective. But at the same time, it has a lot of universal
appeal
to it, because I think everybody can relate to these characters.
Absent in the movie.
They're absent in the sense that you don't see them. But that was a very conscious choice because I wanted, you know, during the rehearsal period, all I did was work with the actors about their relationship with their parents. And in a way, it's interwoven into the movie, and that every time, you know, the kids, when they make decisions, when they react to things, a lot of times it deals directly to their relationship with parents. Right. So even though you don't see the parents on screen, I feel like they're very present throughout the film, and they're just kind of hovering right outside of the movie frame itself.
We're talking with Justin Lin, who's the director of Better Luck Tomorrow, a film that's opening nationwide and in Orange County at The Block this Friday. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California nor the management of KUCI. This is Dan Zhang with Subversity. So it was conscious because you didn't want to make it a stereotype?
It was conscious because I felt like, you know, the focus is going to be on the kids. I know filmmaking is very subjective. You know,
sure.
Even though we show 90 minutes, 4 months of their life, we have to choose what we want to show.
Sure.
And I think part of it is that, you know, these kids are so smart. They're able to create their own space, you know, and a lot of times, and these parents, in all definition, they're not bad people, they're not bad parents. It's just that I think a lot of times people do take things on face value. You know, I remember when I was growing up and when I work with kids today, it seems like if you get straight A's, that's almost like a mark, you know, that you're supposed to be a good kid and that you can get away with everything. You say, oh, I'm going out tonight, you know, I got to study with my friend. And the parents be like, well, he's a straight A student, okay, let's let him go out, you know. And that's part of what we want to explore. And I didn't want to like pinpoint it on the parents. I didn't want to say, okay, it's the parents' fault or anything, because it's not anybody's fault. It's about, and I wanted to focus on the kids themselves.
I was actually intrigued that the fact was the ethnicities of the characters didn't matter. But you think the fact that they're Asian did matter or not?
It matters a lot in that it's their experience. That's the perspective that the audience is going to share with the film. But at the same time, you know, I made a conscious effort that, you know, I didn't want them to have to explain why they need to exist on screen. Mm-hmm. Because I think cinema is very backwards. Like, every time you see an Asian face or Asian American face or even a Latino face or a gay face, they always have to be there for that reason, you know?
It's not taken for granted, usually. In other films, they have to kind of go through
They
the
always have to
catharsis.
Explain. You know, you see a Native American, you're like, okay, so this must be something spiritual or something. You know, it's it's film language, and it's very backwards, because I don't feel like I have to explain myself every second of my life, and I don't think these characters need to either. And that's, I think by doing that, you know, part of it was because I wanted to stay very true to the teenagers, to the characters. A lot of times, I feel like, you know, you see teenagers on screen, they're like movie, quote-unquote, teenagers, you know? But in this time, I tried really hard to kind of portray and stay true to, like, real characters, real people.
How much effect did this Stuart Tay case have on the film?
It definitely had an effect, you know? I mean, I grew up in Orange County, and I think around that time, that wasn't the only case that happened. There was a rash of cases that came up, and, you know, it blew me away because, you know, I think I was in college at that time. I had just graduated college. I was in college, and I heard about it, and I was like, oh, my God, it's right, you know, I used to play basketball, like, a couple miles from that school. I knew people that went to that school.
Sunny Hills in Fullerton.
Yeah, and, you know, it was very disturbing to me, and it affected me on many levels, and in a way, as disturbed and shocked as I was, I could relate to a certain level of angst and anger, and that's where kind of the impetus came from, is through cases like those. And, you know, when we started off, you know, working on the project, writing the script, you know, I thought, wow, you know, these are issues I want to explore. I'm not, you know, in a way, like a lot of people, you know, bring up the Stuart Tate case because, you know, there's similarities in that. It's a group of very smart kids, and there's certain plot points that, you know, certain acts that are similar. But it's funny, I've gotten to know the case more after making the film because I consciously did not want to based on it, because I had a lot of issues I want to deal with myself, and I didn't think, out of respect for the people that were involved in that case, I have no idea what exactly happened. I don't know those characters. I don't know the people that were involved. So I wanted to kind of, you know, distance, you know, the film away from them, but at the same time deal with certain issues that, you know, in a way I'm sure are very relatable. And so I think by doing that, and people, you know, thinking that, okay, well, they're Asian and there's violence, it must be this. It just shows that, like, you know, we need to look closer, you know, because I've learned so much about the case now, and there are similarities, but it's actually very different. Like, you know, I don't know the real life characters. I don't even know their names, except for, like, Stuart Tate. But at the same time, you know, when I got to know the case itself, I realized, wow, you know, it's actually not similar at all, except for certain, like, really broad stroke points.
Because not all the students were at the same school, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think that was one of the things. And also just, you know, certain acts and even, like, very specific acts weren't even the same. And motivation, you know, was different. And,
Do you think there's a danger that because all the, you know, all you know about the characters are that they're Asian, that it plays into this stereotype that all Asians look alike and that they don't, you know, there's no kind of
No,
history.
I don't think so at all. I think it would only be a danger if I didn't do my job and that this film was a caricature. These were one-dimensional characters. You know, I did not make this film to say, hey, look, everybody in the world, this film is about every Asian American. You know, it's not. It's so specific. I mean, it's so specific to a point that it's upper middle class, Asian American, male, honor roll, teen, you know, academic decathlon kid. You know, like, it's so specific in its perspective. And I think, you know, that also shows a lack of representation in cinema. Because the ideal situation is that we have, you know, three Asian American films at any given time in theaters. And one of them might be a dark, you know, film that deals with violence. Another one could be a sweet, like, romantic comedy. Or, you know, and that's what makes a cinema.
Sure.
You know, and in no way am I trying to say, look, this film is Asian American cinema. It's part of Asian American cinema.
But but people are taking it as the kind of the new Asian cinema, though, because you're not stuck to this old kind of view of traditional kind of history and kind of homeland stuff.
Right, and I think in that, it really, I think it's out of respect for those films. You know, I think that those issues have been explored and they've been well done. And I grew up watching those films and I'm very proud. And I'm like, wow, I get to see Asian American experiences. I get to see, you know, them dealing with family issues. And that's great. I'm so glad. And I know they've been dealt with before and they will be dealt with, I'm sure, you know, with time. But I think that there's other perspectives that has never been seen before.
You know, I just saw on cable another film about teenagers killing another teen, and it was Bully.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some ways it's a kind of a similar story, but then in other ways the depiction's different because there's a lot more sex.
Right.
And do you think it's just because these are Asian kids doing it and there's not that much sex or what?
No, I think there's a lot of, you know, a part of this, you know, I didn't want to make sex for sex sake. I mean, there's a lot of repression that's going on, and there's definitely a lot of sexual energy that's going on in Better Luck Tomorrow.
Right.
But I think as a filmmaker, you know, Larry Clark is very, you know, when you watch his films, they're very explicit, you know. I think, you know, my style, especially with Better Luck Tomorrow, is to not show you everything. I think even in the most violent scenes, you actually don't see a lot.
It's off camera.
It's off camera, and I think for me, that's more powerful, and that's my style, and that's the style I wanted for this film.
So, do you feel that I know some people think the ending was too, you know, I mean, I don't want to give away the ending, but it seems like it implies they got away with it, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's a very simplified reaction, and it's okay, you know, and I hope that people that think that would voice their opinion, talk to others that might not agree, because, you know, in a sense, we're so used to things being wrapped up in 90 minutes.
You don't want a pat ending.
And I don't want a pat ending. And the thing is, when you read articles like this, you see acts of teen violence, the kids don't disappear. They live on. They grow and they live on, whether they get caught or they don't get caught. There's consequences. There's reactions to their actions. There's emotions to their actions. And that's what I want to portray in this film. I want to have people watch the film, and when the credits rolled, they had to think for themselves, wow, two questions, hopefully, and I've done my job. Number one, how did these kids that I can relate to on such a level in the beginning got to where they got to at the end? Number two, what's going to happen to them now that like all this craziness has happened? If they can ask those two questions, I feel like, wow, you know, that's the intent of the movie, is to say, look, why? Because I don't have the answers myself, but I think that the only reason, the only way our, you know, everyone can kind of potentially come up with an answer is to raise these questions and talk amongst ourselves.
You're not trying, also, you're not saying that a lot of kids try to sneak their way into top schools.
No, again, I don't. I'm just saying that this is a very specific experience. These are kids who are literally too smart for their own good, you know. And I'm not making generalized statements by any means, you know. So
it's not a documentary.
It's not a documentary. And believe me, documentaries are also very subjective, too.
Yeah,
I made those.
Right, for sure. But is there also a class analysis one could put? I know I've talked to some film, you know, professors here, and they thought it was a very interesting film because there's this kind of more upper middle class, and then this richer kid who is the target.
I think class is something that gets lost, you know, in American discourse overall. You know, I think we're so preoccupied with race that I think class plays a big role in the film. You know, of these kids who, and dealing with ceilings and glass ceilings and looking up and down and the power struggles that exist within any group. That was very conscious too.
Also, this whole concept of home alone kids, the parachute kids.
Not all of them were parachute kids.
Not all of them, but
you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I think when we were making the film, I you know, Derek, the character Derek, was a parachute kid, and you know, I felt like that was something that I felt was part of that character. When we developed that character, I wanted him to be a parachute kid. I wanted him to have a sense of abandonment and that perspective, you know, and that's something that you don't see a lot in cinema. In a way, we don't make a big deal out of it in the movie. You know, I think there's only one mentions of it, and that's it. But it was very important in how we crafted the character. How I was able to work with Roger and create that character was, you know, and just as much as, you know, Stephanie being an adoptee.
Did you pick John Cho because he was more experienced actor to play that role, or was it just
John I work with in Chopping for
right.
Fangs,
right?
And at the same time, you know, I think, you know, and at this time in his career, I think the dynamics with even amongst the actors, you know, really, you know, it was in play. You know, I think John mm-hmm. has, you know, he's at a level that's different from all the other mm-hmm. actors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I knew that Steve was going to be someone that's going to be a little distant. And knowing John the way I do, I just felt like, you know, he would have no problem playing that role. And knowing the actors, working with them, I knew that that was just an extra layer that I can use as a director to use kind of like the dynamics of where they each are in their craft and career.
So in terms of marketing, now that MTV has picked up the distribution, has that been a struggle? Why did it take so long?
MTV has been amazing. I have to say, I you know, a lot of times people really quick they hear MTV and they think, oh yeah, they're just gonna, you know, change them to white characters, whatever, you know, and it's like
whitewash it.
Yeah, and I feel like I had the luxury when we got into Sundance that more than one company wanted to acquire the film. Hmm. And I actually sat through these meetings and I got to talk to them, and we actually took, you know, less money to go with MTV because I felt like they got the movie. And in all honesty, I think if you look at the films that they make, you know, like whether Jackass or Britney Spears movies, they make these movies that make a lot of money that are very broad. So for them to say, you know, to get excited and say, wow, we saw this film, it deals with serious issue and we want to take this to our demographic because it's that important. I have to say, you know, I have to applaud them for trying. And so far through the whole process, you know, they've been very upfront. They've never, you know, veered away from what they said in the first day. So that I think is probably pretty rare. And the reason why it took this long is because they wanted to get to know the film. They want, you know, and we also had other festivals that we had to go to, and I really want to go to them because, you know, part of it is, you know, as much as I've been learning about the studio process, I wanted to educate them too. You know, the first thing they said is like, well, we're going to take this out. And I said, no, we should really go to the Asian American mm-hmm. Film Festivals. I feel like it's important, you know. I grew up with these festivals. We have a relationship, and this film was made also to create dialogue within our community, mm-hmm. you know. So they were very open, and we went through, and we went to Toronto. So we went to some, you know, pretty prestigious film festivals. So, you know, it does take a year to go through that. And I was also fortunate enough where they said, hey, you know, I know you made, you know, we know that you made it for nothing, but now that, you know, we've been acquired, how about we give you a little money and you can do whatever you want? What would you do? And I thought, oh, great. I got to go back in the cutting room. I would take a frame out here, two frames there, things that no one would notice except for me. But I got to go in there, and this is rare. I got to go in and kind of recraft the movie. And the movie's essentially the same, but it's now I added a couple of scenes in there that I've always wanted to have. And now it's complete. I feel like it's complete and it's ready to go out. And they, you know, and of course they had to find the right time to take it out. And
also, you improved the audio, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were able to go back in and really kind of just play with everything. Yeah. And, you know, because in all honesty, when you have no money, you're just patchworking with everything through. But luckily, you know, I do think that the film that is going to come out on April 11th is going to be, you know, the film that I've always wanted to make.
You don't think they're going to try to de-emphasize the certain parts of the Asian story?
No, that was one worry too. But if you look at the poster, the movie poster, it's so great. You know, you're going to be going to a multiplex or a theater, and you're going to see this poster with Asian American faces on there, all six of them.
Yeah.
You know, and they're proud. I think that they're, you know, they feel like, you know, first of all, I think the thing is, on top of even the Asian American issues, I think they're just very proud of the film. So they get it. I get that sense, and I'm so glad that I was able to sit down and really talk with them before I decided to go with them.
Do you think you'd be able to reach, like, mainstream America or Midwest American kids?
I think so. I think that, you know, if they come and see it, and that's been all indication, is that, you know, as long as they could plop down the money, go in the theater, they will get it. You know, because everybody that we've shown it to that's not Asian American, you know, they said, wow, this is such a unique perspective. First of all, we've never seen Asian Americans that are three-dimensional. Second of all, like, I can totally relate to them as human beings. Whereas before, they're just like these, you know, comic reliefs or whatever. Yeah. And so, you know, I do feel like it can happen, but it actually is going to take, you know, people to go see it in the major markets for it to, you know, spread to like middle America. And I think that's ultimately what we want to do, is to, you know, is to show it, have Asian Americans come out and support it, and at the same time cross over so people can actually start seeing, wow, representation is three-dimensional. It's not just this caricature.
So you're starting off at 10 different
markets. Yeah, it's what they call a platform screen, platform release. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's been a battle. I have to say, it was a battle when we first day got the credit cards. It has never stopped. You know, even though we got distribution, the platform release, what they do is they open 4 markets, LA, New York, San Francisco, Chicago, and they will put it on like 10 screens. And if people come out and support it, they'll put it on more screens. But if people don't come and support it, it'll be gone. Like all this 3-year journey could be gone in 3 weeks.
So that's the danger. The first weekend is the most important.
It's first very, very important. I think that for a few reasons, I think, you know, on an Asian American level, you know, I've sat in marketing meetings where, you know, they would show me like the pie chart, you know, and half of it is African American, because African Americans are the biggest movie going audience out there. That's why you see a lot of African American films. And then there's a little slice that has Latinos. And the rest was Caucasian. And I asked them, I said, where are the Asian Americans? Right. And they said, you know, there's a lot of Asian Americans, and we know Asian Americans put a lot of money into the economy, but their spending patterns are exactly the same as middle class Caucasians, so we consider them Caucasians. And then when I heard that, I was like, wow, I mean, this is one chance where you can actually show up and say, no, we want to see Asian American faces on screen. So if you put your money down, and believe me, they do exit pools. They know exactly who comes to see the films. Huh. They will know if enough Asian Americans come out and support this film that I guarantee I've been in enough meetings with other studios that if this thing does well and there's a big Asian American turnout, they're going to greenlight us, you know, an Asian American film on a smaller level for studios, but at the same time, it would be probably the biggest budget any independent Asian American film ever, you know, has seen to date.
And in Orange County, you wanted to open at the Block, right?
Right.
You didn't want to go to an art house, like across the street. There's a
I think that, you know, this is a film that, you know, that should be seen by everybody. You know, I know it's more of a challenge because, you know, we're not labeled as an art house, even though we have the pedigree of an art house film, because we've been at Sundance in Toronto and we have that critical backing. But it's not, you know, I think there's, it's not just about making money. It's about getting people to see it so they can talk about it, you know. Yeah. And we went to a lot of UC Irvine kids and we said, look, you know, you've seen a film. Where would you go see it? And would you go to the Edwards across the street? That was my natural inclination. And they said, no, absolutely not. We like to go to the Block.
So that's why they hang out.
Yeah. And I said, well, if they go there, let's try to go to the Block. And you know, the distributors went to the theaters and they're like, yeah, of course. So, you know, I mean, usually that's the hardest, is to convince exhibitors that, you know, that you're worth playing there. But they've been waiting for something like this. But now it's actually up to the people to go and show up. Because what this film does, the journey that we've gone through, is not to say that we made it. It's not even close. What this film does is it actually gives us an opportunity. So if we can create an opportunity for the audience to show up, and the audience does show up, we're going to get a chance to make more films, to see more perspectives. And, you know, and that's, I think that's exciting for Asian American cinema. But even on an independent cinema level, I think is very exciting, because if you go and support a film like this, you're saying, I just like seeing films that are outside the box, that are challenging, that are a little bit more different. And I think hopefully it will happen. If it happens, the studios will listen, because they only operate on green. You know, they're in the business of making money. And I feel like as consumers, we can actually dictate where they can go. We can actually tell them which way to go.
So with all this money now, is there a lot of money? Can you pay the actors now?
No, it's still a struggle. I mean, the thing is, it's a very low level.
Right.
Luckily, I got to pay my credit card bills back.
Oh, good.
I still have bad credit now, but I was able to pay it back off. But, you know, This film has never been about money. When it was acquired, right. It wasn't for a bundle of money. It was just enough to pay back the investors, which was my ultimate goal.
Sure.
Because if I could get back the investors the money, then I think they're more apt to want to invest in other Asian American films. And that was the other thing that was a big problem, is that every Asian American film that's come out to date has lost money, and so you lose that pool of investors. And soon, you know, it's 10 years, and it was impossible to find any investors to come on board because they've all, like, believed in projects that didn't work financially, and they're business people, and they're not going to do it again. So I feel like if anything, it is to try to kind of reverse that trend and to say, look, this is something that can make money. You know, it's profitable. Yeah. People want to see films like this. They want to see Asian Americans on screen. And slowly we can turn the tide.
So you think, what projects are you working on now then? I mean, usually, you know, by the time your film is shown, you're working on something else, right?
Yeah, I'm working on many projects. I've been very, very fortunate. So I've been looking at a lot of stuff. And you know, to be honest, I've had to turn down some, like, really big studio projects because I felt like, you know, some of the subjects were, you know, to be honest, a little offensive to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like, some of the representations that are on screen weren't my thing, or, you know, and some other things, just, they're not my style. They're not dealing with issues that really hit me, you know, in my gut. So I am working on, like, you know, I'm working on studio level. I'm working with Spike Lee's company for something. And then I'm also working with Christine Vachon, who's one of the great independent producers. And at the same time, I've been very fortunate to have gotten a deal to form a company, a small production company. And, you know, we're going to produce, I'm looking for like young, talented Asian Americans, because I want to also foster that. And we're looking to produce other Asian American projects. So, and I also have Asian American projects of my own that I'm still developing. So, you know, it's about taking this momentum and trying to build on it.
Right.
And build on it. And it's not going to happen overnight, but this is the only chance of opportunity that I think we've seen in the last, I don't know how many years. And that's why I think it's important to go out and support a film like this.
You shot some of the scenes in Orange County, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was dictated by whoever could give us the location for free, basically, because we didn't have any money. So we went anywhere. We went to the Valley. We shot in L.A. We shot in Orange County. You know, anywhere.
You shot at the pier, the Newport Beach, or was it?
It was a Balboa pier, I think. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we shot anywhere we could to.
And was your parents' house, or was it some places?
Well, my parents' house actually acted as the command central.
Oh,
I mean, everyone just had a sleeping bag and crashed at my parents' house. Yeah.
So do you feel that with this experience, I mean, has it changed your life?
It's definitely changed my life. I think, you know, for the longest time, I could say, wow, I mean, a year ago, I didn't have any money. All I was eating was oatmeal, trying to get by, or I had to sell my truck this day last year just to pay rent, you know. But everything worked out, you know. I think, you know, I would have been fine. I would have been fine if we made this film exactly the way it was and we didn't get any distribution. As an artist, I felt like I did the best I could, and I did something I was very passionate. I'm so proud of it because, you know, just because of the collaboration with the actors and the crew and everyone that believed in the project, I was very proud of that. So everything else has been gravy, I think. And I realized how important it is as the journey went on, how, wow, distribution doesn't mean, like, you're off the hook and you can move on. You know, you could, but I feel like this is such a rare opportunity. We should all put our energy into kind of sharing the experience with other people.
Yeah.
You know, letting them know that, you know, this is something that is rare, and we can make a difference. We can actually make a difference, where most of the time in my life, I'm used to thinking, you know, I'm just one of a million, you know, it's not going to make a difference, but this can make a difference.
And in every community, you've been trying to get local people to do word of mouth and come out and help with the film.
Right.
How are you reaching are you going to campuses? Is that
we're you know, we have a website, barelexmall.com, and people have come on, and, you know, a lot of people have been so excited. They would give us, you know, info, and we actually are charting everything out, and I think I'm going to rent, like, a bus or a van, and I'm going to put all the actors in, and we're trying to hit as many campuses as possible, and just kind of share our journey, because this is something that, you know, even if you see the film, you don't totally understand what went behind it. And I think the journey behind it is just as, like, I think, valid as what's on screen, because, you know, it is the process. The process, you learn from the process, you know. And luckily we had an end product that, you know, has moved on and is potential to give us, you know, more opportunities to make other films. You know, I mean, I've talked to, you know, Eric Beiler, like a lot of other Asian American filmmakers, mm-hmm. and who have projects ready to go, and investors and studios are just telling them, hold on, give us 4 to 6 weeks, let's see how Better Luck Tomorrow does, mm-hmm. and that will determine if we will go with you or not. So now it's never been a question of talent or content. It's always been the question of if there's a market for it.
In terms of advertising, are they going to advertise on MTV itself, or how would that work?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to commercials and stuff on MTV, but they're also very conscious of, you know, people that are important to us. So they're letting us to go, you know, they're letting us go out and meeting, you know, to meet everyone, to have screenings, and to talk about the film. So, you know, it's on many different tiers. You know, we're hoping that, you know, the commercials will definitely get people interested and they'll come and see it. But I didn't want to just rest on that. I feel like we didn't make the film with that in mind. So we want to stay true to why we made the film. So that's why we're going out to meet everybody, to talk to everybody.
You also made a short, or there was a short made about the making of the
right, BLT Genesis.
Right, to the trip to Sundance.
Yeah.
Is that going to get shown too?
Yeah, it's been showing a lot, because, you know, it's amazing, because that kind of documentation actually says a lot more than what I can say with words. You know, people actually go through the experience and they saw the hardships and the politics and everything that goes into a small film and going to trying to achieve your dream.
I was stuck that you had to go to, you know, Utah and stick up posters everywhere at night.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it takes. And but I think, so a lot of, you know, a lot of college classes are requesting this. Yeah, so, I mean, we've been making just hundreds of dubs to send it out. You know, just send it out to anybody that wants to show it to their classes, because that says a lot more. You know, this whole journey has been about, you know, about doing something that's passionate, doing something that's different. And luckily, it started off with, you know, just us, the writers, and it snowballed. People came on for the right reason. They were passionate. The actors came on. The crew came on. And now we're at, like, a momentum where we want viewers, we want everybody to come in and be a part of this and be part of this energy.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was our interview with Justin Lin, the director of Better Luck Tomorrow, and we were talking about a film about the making of Better Luck Tomorrow called Genesis. And that's going to play here at UC Irvine, screen here for free tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the Student Center, the Crystal Cove Auditorium. And with us is one of the co-writers of the film, who will be here tomorrow, Fabian Marquez. You graduated from UCI.
That's right.
Were you in film studies?
I was a film studies major, yeah.
And how was that experience? Did you want to get out of Orange County? Well, the film's press notes say that you couldn't wait to get out of Orange County.
Well, I think when you're at that age, you can't wait to get out of wherever you are. And I had grown up in Orange County, and I think initially I really wanted to go elsewhere to school, like a lot of my friends. But my experience at UCI was extremely rewarding, and the people I met there, the teachers especially, really enriched my film experience. And, who knows where I would be now if I didn't go to UCI. So, yeah, it was really great for me.
So you made some good connections here, too.
I did. I made some really good friends, a lot of whom are working in the industry and in the entertainment industry. And, one or two of them are the reasons that I got subsequent jobs after I graduated that led to where I am now.
So you wrote this. When did you start writing this screenplay?
I jumped in around 1998.
Wow.
And Ernesto, the other writer, had worked with Justin on this, but Ernesto was in New York. He was going to Columbia. And he and Justin had a long, road with this project together, but they kind of reached an impasse. And I think in order to kind of mix things up, Justin brought me in, and I had worked with him previously on another project that didn't get made. So we had sort of a rapport, and we had also known each other since childhood. So it kind of helps to have kind of you kind of have a shorthand on expressing ideas, and you know you can use a lot of anecdotes and stuff. So
you knew each other from Orange County.
That's right. Yeah.
And was that in all the way down to elementary school? Or?
Actually, we met in seventh grade. We had you know you make the transition where I grew up. It's elementary school, and then you go to junior high, and then high school. So I met Justin in that transitional in junior high mode in seventh grade, and we all kind of had the same classes. And
were you guys into film at that time or not?
It's funny. We would go to the movies. Like, we had a gang of friends. Like, it was like seven or eight of us. And we were kind of like the United Nations. It was all these different ethnicities that came together, and we all just clicked. And so we would go to movies and be sitting in the movie theater next to each other and wouldn't realize until many years later that we each secretly wanted to do something with film. Hmm. I don't know if Justin was really overtly cognizant of that until he was in high school, but I knew from that age that I'd always wanted to somehow work in the industry, be a director, or at one point I wanted to be like a stand-up comedian, so something I have always sort of aspired to.
Yeah, we're talking with Fabian Marquez, who's a co-writer of a screenplay for Better Luck Tomorrow that's opening on Friday. This is Subversity here on KUCI with Dan Zhang, and the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. So when you were writing this, did you know about the Stuart Tay case?
Actually, no, I didn't. And I didn't really learn about the Stuart Tay case until well into the writing process. It was something that I had read about. I mean, I'm from Orange County, so it's pretty likely that I did hear about it when it happened. But it probably just got put into the just another atrocity, you know, bin of my brain. And I remember when we were working on this, it kind of, you know, it came to my attention when we were talking about Columbine, we were talking about a lot of all this school violence going on. And of course, the Tay thing came into play, and it was a really tragic event.
Yeah, and it seems that at the time it was like, people were thinking that these are good kids, they wouldn't be doing this stuff. Why would they go to a good school or whatever?
Yeah.
Were the characters in the screenplay, were they based on the film? Were they based on true life characters, that people that you knew or that were things that happened to you or what?
I think when you approach a script, you know, at least I usually like to try to bring as much as I can to the characters. And so when you're doing that, you invariably like always interject people that, you know, experiences and people from your life.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of like friends of mine growing up that are in Virgil, that are in Ben, these dynamic characters. There's events that I can recall that, they always end up in the script somehow, the little pieces of them. You have to have a little bit of reality and truth, and that's what we aspire to. And so, it's hard to take, when you're writing from like people that you know are a good source of inspiration or your own experiences, your own process, but I think it would be really hard to write a movie about people that you don't know and try to somehow appropriate their voices.
Right.
And, it's just, you don't have a connection to them, so it's impossible.
It would sound fake.
Exactly. And you're not, it's sort of irresponsible in that you're not, you're not being true to the events or the people, especially with something that is so tragic and disturbing as like the Stuart Tay case or the Columbine murders.
Did you have any kind of say into who the actors would be?
Yeah, I actually am credited as a casting associate in addition to co-writer, along with a few other hats that I wore.
Uh-huh.
But it was quite a long process to find those guys.
Did you know at the beginning that you would get certain people or what?
I think the only guy that we knew we had was John Cho. He plays Steve. And a lot of that is because we just...
Well, he knew him from the other movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Shopping for Fangs.
Yeah. And So it didn't matter. I had asked I had asked him this other question also, Justin, this other question about why, not why, but it's notable that it doesn't matter what ethnicity the Asians are, they're kind of just Asians in this film. Was that a deliberate thing in this script too?
I think that it was a deliberate thing to get trapped in the mechanics of ethnicity and to, you know, because then you're bringing other baggage to the table that we didn't want to be there. Our aim was to strictly explore, you know, what these characters are going through in their lives and present it as something that everyone can relate to. So if we veered, I think, too much off into, like, the ethnicity category, then, you know, we felt like that was something to avoid.
Something what?
Something to avoid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because that's the traditional kind of... I was talking to him about how this was the kind of the traditional way of presenting Asian Americans as you kind of go through this history, kind of this homeland kind of stuff. And
right.
This catharsis of, you know, arriving here, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this film doesn't do any of that.
No. I mean, the only person that you have a sort of origin story on is... Mm. Is the character of Stephanie, the only female lead, and she is an adopted child by white parents. So you get that in the film that she's got white parents that adopted her at a young age, and she doesn't know her real parents. But we don't tread too closely to the ethnicity category because it becomes a different film, and I think it's too easy in the writing. You want to be true to that, and cultural magnetism, you know, really pulls you in, but we definitely try to steer clear.
How about the sexuality in the film? It was pretty kind of subdued, I guess you would say. How would you characterize it?
Yeah, subdued's a good word.
Repressed.
No. Well, but there is sexuality in the film.
There is.
Definitely not a PG film.
Uh-huh.
Again, it's something that, you know, you get that they're horny guys and all that sort of thing, but they're, you know...
Virtue is always grabbing something.
Exactly. We won't say what, because there's no four-letter words on the show, but he is grabbing something. No, I think that... Do you mean, like, just in terms of when it actually happens, it seems subdued?
No, I mean, it's not... I was comparing... I had talked to... to Justin about this, about I just seen a bully, and bully is like totally, you know, I mean, it's also killing somebody, but
right,
it's the teens are just having sex left and right.
Right. Well, that has a lot to do with the filmmaker.
That's what he said. Right.
Yeah. But I think we thought that it was really important to bring in sexuality, obviously, because, you know, teenage boys, I mean, that factors pretty prominently in their lives, so. That was a constant element, but again, we wanted to tell a certain kind of story, and so a lot of that stuff kind of becomes peripheral.
Do you think it's like a wake-up call for parents, this film?
I could see it being a wake-up call for some parents. I actually was at a screening at Sundance last year, and parents came up to me with their teenage son, a couple of parents, and they were excited. They actually came up to congratulate us and to say how much they enjoyed the film, and they felt, you know, lucky to be watching it with their son because they were about to go have a conversation about it. And I've talked to other parents about, you know, what do you think is too young to screen this film for a child, or is there an age that's too young? I think definitely there is a cutoff. I wouldn't recommend young children seeing the film, but I think it's important for kids that are going into their adolescence, their early adolescence, and experiencing things and kind of growing up into that realm. It's really important, I think, for parents and for kids to have a dialogue about it, and just to explore those issues and not be ashamed or afraid.
Do you think there's just too much pressure on kids to excel?
I would say so. I mean, I believe that this society, just by watching television, which factors so much as a cultural device in this society, kids are I mean, I think that it points to extremes, and if you're going to be good at something, I think there is that tendency that society puts on kids to be the best, or somehow that's not good enough if you're not. And, you know, and then I think, you know, it depends on a case-by-case basis with parents and everything, but some cultures do traditionally or stereotypically put pressure, more pressure on their kids than others. And I think it was fun to kind of play with that sort of stereotype of the model minority myth when dealing with Asian American characters.
Right.
Because you certainly get the sense from them that they do have a lot of pressure, whether it's just pressure they put on themselves or pressure from their parents.
And the parents are never really in the movie, but they are kind of hovering around, as Justin says.
Yeah, we had fun with that, because it's really hard to tell a story about teenagers without depicting their parents. And it wasn't that we are trying to create a world where parents don't exist, but rather we wanted to emphasize the role of parents by their absence.
Mm, yeah, because I think I've seen other films, other Asian American films or ethnic films, and in which the parents are kind of stereotypical. They bang the table, they scream at the kids, and you know. So, but that's kind of too exaggerated in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. I think when you see the same images over and over again,
right,
that's when you start to get into cliche territory.
Right.
Obviously, not everyone is like that. No, it was fun as a writer to explore all these issues with Justin, because I'm not Asian American, and I was a little worried at first how I would service the story if the characters are coming from a place that's out of my experience.
Yeah.
But it was really great to work with someone like Justin, who really had a clear idea of how to make this movie from the start, and could help kind of guide. So I could be really creative, and he kind of would have veto power, and you know, would pick and choose a lot of things.
So did you like writing as a kid too? Or,
not really. In fact, I don't think I really still like writing. It's still kind of a chore. It's one of those things that I always procrastinate the most on. Mm-hmm. I'd rather sit down and eat like a box of Twinkies than sit at my computer and write a, you know, a short scene or something. But I think that just I really have this intense love for film and filmmaking. And it's just, I just kind of see it as a necessary evil. Although I do enjoy it once I'm into it. It's just sometimes it's like pulling teeth.
What was it? So you're versatile, I guess. what do you like best in filmmaking, I guess?
I'm just sort of hooked on filmmaking in general. I mean,
yeah.
I'm excited by the power of cinema. And I do see cinema as an art form, or at least something that can be an art form when it's done well.
Right.
And when you're making movies and you're involved with a group of filmmakers and they all sort of share the same ideas that you do and the same kind of ethics when it comes to filmmaking, that is an extremely rewarding experience. And I really get off on that collaborative vibe, and, you know, and it's really exciting when you have the end product in your hands and you're molding it and shaping it, and then when you get to screen it for people, it's the best feeling in the world to get the reaction from the audience and to feel that energy as they're kind of immersed in the world that you've created. It's one of the most gratifying things I've ever done.
Do you think, what do you think of going mainstream then?
Well, I think, you know, this new term, the mainstream, is very broad. I mean, I think...
Very what?
Very broad, in my opinion. Because, look at, here we are now. I mean, we've got MTV Films and Paramount distributing this film. And it's a film that was made for $250,000, which is, that's nothing. That's your craft service budget on a film.
It's still an indie film, I guess.
It's very much an indie film. But I think people can have the misconception that because of the brands that are now associated with it, that now we're a mainstream film. But... I think that we're still going to bring our sensibilities to anything that we do. I don't think we're going to, you know, kind of just take the money and run. I think all of us only have been responding to projects that really challenge us artistically and, you know, kind of make us excited to tell a story.
So has the phone stopped ringing, or is it still ringing? Or what?
The phone is ringing a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I still work with Justin. And, we see each other we have an office, a production office, and it's like, you know, amazing. I mean, the people really have responded to the film in Hollywood and seem to be really excited about the kind of filmmaking that Justin Lin is capable of based on this example.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. So how about your friends at UCI before? Have they seen the film, or what's the reaction?
Yeah, quite a few of them have seen the film, and you know, it's nice because you can have discussions with them. And we used to always argue about movies back in college, so it's kind of fun to argue about, you know, my film now. And plus, a lot of them are writers, and a lot of them make movies, and so we always do this with each other. But no, the overall response has been overwhelmingly positive. I think there's sort of like this unsaid, you know, challenge going on, and a few of us are pretty competitive to try to, right, you know, to try to make films and get in there and establish ourselves. And I think, you know, the goal is like who can buy the film library first or something, you know, who can put the name on the building or whatever, which is not something I'm crazy about, but it's funny because a lot of our guys that came out of UCI are really into, you know, going after their passions.
Yeah, yeah. Did you also grew up in Orange County?
Yeah, I grew up in Anaheim.
And did your parents, were they born here? Or?
No, my family is actually from Argentina, and I was the youngest child, and I was born in Los Angeles, so I'm the only one. And I had sort of a bilingual home.
Yeah.
I'd speak Spanish at school, and then, I mean, at home, and then go to school and speak English. And so, you know, it was kind of interesting in Orange County at the time, because this was in the 70s, early 70s, and, you know, there weren't a lot of Spanish speakers in my neighborhood.
Not that many. I think Justin says there weren't that many Asians either.
Yeah, Justin, I think it was even less Asians. I don't think there's anyone in Cyprus at the time, the city that he grew up in, that was Asian. We had a few Latinos, so I think we kind of outnumbered them.
So are you going to be here tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Ah, cool. Yeah, and there's another film actually, right? Isn't there somebody else making another film about the continuing journey of this film?
I haven't heard that. It could
right?
be.
Yeah.
Well, I know that some permutation of the BLT Genesis documentary is going to be aired on PBS in May.
And I thought also that maybe the MTV people are following the crowd around, I guess.
Oh, I think that did happen, yeah. I think they're airing some spots on Movie House, and Suchin Park, who's one of the VJs on MTV, is doing a special. I think it's like a half-hour special or something like that.
So are you getting like treated like royalty now? Or?
No. I'm a writer. Writers don't get treated like royalty.
Justin came to KUCI in a limo.
Oh, my God. I was probably driving it.
No, I think somebody else was driving.
Oh, okay.
They had a chauffeur. Because he was waiting outside. Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, he's gotten to fly first class, too, man. I can't believe that. It's great.
Well, I guess maybe he won't get SARS or something. Nobody's there except you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the limo thing, because tonight is actually our premiere in Hollywood.
Oh, right.
And Justin, obviously, his parents are coming up from Buena Park. And so he arranged for a car to have him picked up. And he told me, oh, my God, my parents are so excited. This is the first time in their lives they're actually seeing the inside of a limousine. So it's just really, you know, yeah. I mean, if... we all feel like if this all went away tomorrow, we would be the happiest people on the planet. It's just,
yeah,
you know, we just really worked hard. We're really not into the glamour and the glitz at all.
Right.
We just want to make a good film, and we continue to be really hardworking. And so these little things that come up are kind of amusing, but I really can't see Justin or any of us really getting used to that, you know.
Yeah, right. There's actually a lot of UCI people helping with this crowd turnout thing.
Quite a few. It's been amazing. The UCI involvement in Better Luck Tomorrow has just been one of the best parts of this whole journey.
I think one of them was my student.
Who's that?
Sharon Dang.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Doesn't she graphic design for you?
Sharon does. She does amazing work. She designed our main title sequence in the film. So when you're watching the movie, you see Sharon's work as the title Better Luck Tomorrow comes across screen. She designed all of our early posters. She designed all these T-shirts, which are amazing.
Right, right.
We're going to have some T-shirts tomorrow night to give out to the crowd. So.
And she's actually in the Genesis movie. There's pictures of her as she comes up in the film, actually.
Yeah, she's actually in the film, yeah.
Right.
She acts in it. Quite a good actor. But well, I was also referring earlier to this huge number, like, there's a ton of kids that are helping out.
Right. Catherine Nguyen is organizing them.
Yes, Kathy Nguyen. She's just doing a fantastic job, as are all the people down there that are helping out.
You know, I know that the other films, I remember when another indie film was playing in Orange County, Yellow. The people were, the folks with the connected with the film were on another show here on KCI.
Oh, really?
And there were posters all over campus. And I think that weekend they actually took in the most of any LA outlet.
Oh, I can imagine.
At the theater across the street, which was pretty amazing. This was a few years back.
That's great. Especially because that theater across the street doesn't have a discount for students.
Yeah, it has discounts for people over 55.
Right.
Yeah. Although a lot of UCI people work there, I think, actually.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
there
cool.
A lot of friends, people that work, well, you know, might let you in. But anyway, so good luck on this film.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope to see you tomorrow.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye. That was Fabian Marquez, who's a UCI Film Studies graduate and the co-writer of the screenplay for Better Luck Tomorrow. And tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the Crystal Cove Auditorium, there'll be a free showing of the making of Better Luck Tomorrow, a film called Genesis, about its journey to Sundance Film Festival. And that's at 7 o'clock at the Crystal Cove Auditorium at UC Irvine. This film airs or screens on Friday. The film itself, Better Luck Tomorrow, which is a kind of loosely based on this honor roll murder case at the Sunny Hills High School, which a Chinese student was killed by his other class, by some other Asian students, and buried alive. This film will open at selected theaters around the country and at the Block in Orange, the city of Orange, on Friday. This is Dan Tsang. We're going to be signing off. Today we thank Justin Lin, the director of Better Luck Tomorrow, Fabian Marquez, the co-writer, for being on the program. Two of the actors in the film, Jason Tobin and John Cho, are previous guests of Subversity when they were in Yellow and also Shopping for Fangs, which was another Justin film, co-directed film. This is Dan Zhang signing off for Subversity. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. Check out also the OOC Weekly for interview with Justin that will be coming out on Thursday. And at the Newport Beach Film Festival on Thursday, the closing night film will be another film by Hill Portes, a Filipino director that has been on this program, and there will also be a screening of the Vietnamese director Do Minh Duan. His Foul King will be showing at 5 o'clock at the Lido Theater, and he will be present. His interview was aired last week on this program. The Newport Beach Film Festival is newportbeachfilmfest.com, www.newportbeachfilmfest.com. Thanks for listening.